irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, I'm excited to have with us Hallie Bach. Hallie is the founder and CEO of Life Incorporated, an organization that fosters mindful connection in all areas of life as the means to experience a wholehearted, fulfilling, and joyful life. Previously, Bach had spent over a decade as a shareholder and CEO of a successful training and development company where she both worked on and studied human dynamics and relationships and their impact on business and individual success. The focus of her company was on developing the art and skill of conversation as the vehicle for creating connection with teams, employees, leaders, and individuals, as well as transforming individual and collective results. Based out of Seattle, Washington, Bach now spends her time writing, teaching, and leading her organization while also coaching executives. As a prominent thought leader, Bach has spoken to leaders and audiences across the globe on the topics of relationships, connection, culture, management, and fulfillment. She has also been relied on by substantial media outlets for her expertise. In addition, Bach serves on the board of several nonprofits and can often be found exploring the trails with her wife and two children. Life Incorporated, a practical guide to wholehearted living, can be purchased on Amazon and was recently released. So, Hallie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's so great.
And for putting up with reading that very long bio.
Oh, it's so much fun. I love reading people's bios, though, because I think it's so funny in our technological-driven world that sometimes I feel like we lose the bit about who the people are. So we're not just some amorphous voice out there that people are listening to while they're running or on their way to work or on their way home. It kind of gives people a better sense of who you are as a human being, which I think has a lot to do with the work that you do, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, I often am asked about, purpose. How do we know what our purpose should be? And my take on it is purpose is something that occurs in the rearview mirror, right? It's revealed to us. By pursuing our passion, we then, you know, figure out what our purpose is. And to that point, you know, everything, I had no idea, you know, 10 years ago that this is where things would lead. But of course, it was all building in its own special way.
I know. Life sometimes has other plans for us than we sometimes even
yes.
expect
and
ourselves.
Sometimes we get clued in and sometimes we don't.
Yeah, it's so funny. Just as I was riding over here and getting ready to do our interview, one of my spiritual teachers had sent me like a little voice memo saying, hey, the energy of this week is notice if that there's something in your life that's not working and you're asking yourself, universe or whatever you believe in, why is this happening to me right now? And he said something interesting that I'd never heard before. He said that sometimes if we are not paying attention to people being messengers or things showing up in our life, like our life purpose, that God or the universe or whatever you believe in will have a backlog and is trying to show you the thing at the forefront that it wants you to pay attention to. And we keep kind of shuffling it under the rug and ignoring it. And until we deal with that issue that is the most important issue for us right then, we're going to keep kind of failing and making the same mistakes. Does that make sense?
I lived through that.
Oh, so tell me.
I think another way to put that is that we're constantly being sent messages, constantly.
Yes.
You know, there are little moments of serendipity, or we sense, you know, there's deja vu, or we just feel energized by something, or we start to struggle. There's little things that get in our way, and these can be whispers, and the more we just keep plowing forward because we've decided, you know, we're going to stick by God to the goal we had and be rigid in it, those whispers become, you know, louder and louder until someone like me, who's a total, you know, class one type A, you know, I have to be careful about what goals I set because then I would like damage myself getting to them. But I mean, it took a life altering rug being pulled out from underneath me, which I go to, explain in the book, for me to get that. For me, it was that my time in the leadership company that I was running, which was also a family business, and it was a very difficult relationship I had with my mother, who was the founder, and just persisting in something that ultimately was causing me more harm than good. But I was so dead set on, no, I'm going to make this work. I'm going to make this work because this is such a great story. and was kind of more and more denying the work that you find in the book, which is really getting to the personal side of things versus the corporate side, to where my own mother fired me. out of the blue. Yes. I mean, it was like, what? I mean,
how can your mom fire you?
And she asked for a glass of wine to toast the occasion after. I mean,
oh,
it was like, so it's worse than a Mexican soap opera. but you know, it was such an event that I couldn't even go back to that, right? It was made so clear that I was thrust out of that, all the doors, you know, sort of welded shut behind, that the only thing to do was write this, you know, GD book, which is what I knew needed to happen, but I wasn't willing to make that kind of change in my life until the universe literally just kicked me in the you know what.
Yeah, that was a pretty good message. It was loud and clear, like a slap in the face from your mother. Listen,
yeah, exactly.
This is your life purpose. Talk about pushing you out of the nest. That was a little bit more of like a kick in the cookus out of the nest, it sounds like.
But, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, we need that. What scares me is that I'm afraid more and more of us are going to need to experience something like that to get our head or our rails out of the track that we are just so grooved in, and that we're sort of mindlessly involved with, because we've made achievement of some sort or another more important, or have gotten so self-identified with that, that at some point there is going to be, you know, whether it's a midlife crisis or it's some event, you know, which I really hope doesn't happen to anyone else. But there's a lot of people that have their own versions of that, right? It's like, now I'm going to honor my path.
Yeah, and it's a wake-up call for all of us. I think that sometimes, it was so funny today, was just, pardon my term here, but a shit show. Anything that could have possibly gone awry today, including, you know, up until us getting on here, and I've never once had an issue with logging on with the station, and everything was just going to shit. And so at first I was like, oh, poor me, I feel like a victim. And then I'm like, oh, wait, I know better than this. The universe is trying to tell me something. What is the message? Show me the message. And I think it has something to do with patience, given what just transpired. And it's just funny to kind of laugh and giggle about it rather than curling up in a ball and saying, I give up on everything, you know, which I think is what us as human beings, we tend to do. We tend to victimize ourselves and victimize other people and to feel sorry for ourselves rather than looking at what is the purpose of this? What is the message that I'm not seeing here? And it sounds like that's what you teach people to do, both professionally in your book, correct?
Yeah, it is. And by the way, I just have to go back. I so love that you use the term shit show. I also use that in my book because I use that in reference to what my mother did. So I just,
that's
like,
awesome.
There was no better word I could use than shit show. So no, we've said it like 10 times now.
Shit show, shit show, shit show.
Yes.
Cover your children's ears.
Yeah, exactly. Now we have to like make an explicit thing on this episode, but it's interesting because you and I were having trouble connecting, getting a clear phone line, and our conversation at some level, you know, is about connection.
Yeah.
And
that's so funny.
And the thing is, we have to work at real connection.
Mm.
And that's sort of the parallel I see. You know, I think so many of us, feel like, well, I'm connected with all these people. You know, I can just get online and I can like a comment or I can throw out a status update and, you know, I'm so connected. Look at all these friends. Well, that at the end of the day, that doesn't mean much. That doesn't teach, you know, empathy. It doesn't, you know, really move us forward. If we really want to connect with someone else, we have to slow down. Get eyeball to eyeball if we can, and speak from our truth, not from an image that we want to project, but from what's authentic in us. I mean, we can tell if somebody is posing or nodding and waiting for their turn to talk. You know, those are all failed attempts at connection. But to really connect, to really feel somebody else's spirit, we have to be still and we have to be present and we have to work at it. And this is all skills that I taught while running the leadership organization. But what I found, which started to disturb me so much that I was, you know, catapulted out and I wrote the book that was calling to me, is that not only do we struggle with connecting with others, we like to hide behind technology and just come in and go out as convenient for us, right? Enter in and out, you know, maybe drop a bomb here, maybe just say like and sort of spin all these plates. But we've also lost, and I say we as in like this happened to me, and I see this happening almost, it feels like an epidemic at some point. Lost the ability to connect with ourselves. And in a way, we're hiding behind technology. We're using technology as a way to escape ourselves. I often heard, because I would go up and do keynotes, you know, that public speaking is the biggest fear, even over death. We're more afraid of public speaking than dying. And I often wonder now if the number one fear wouldn't be being alone with nothing to do.
That's an interesting thought that you have. I would almost go a step further. As you were saying that, kind of the message that came to me when you were saying that is, what if it's actually a fear of being authentically connected or even being seen? Because when you said being a speaker, I think that a lot of speakers can be up there, whether they're Tony Robbins or somebody like yourself or whoever's up there, and I do speaking myself, and you can kind of put on a facade or a bravado and get the point across and have it be motivational and rah-rah in front of people. But when you get an authentic speaker, somebody who's really up there, there's nothing more vulnerable than that person just kind of laying it all on the table. And I know we're laughing and joking about, you know, your mom giving you a saying, get me a glass of wine to toast this. But I could also imagine that in that moment, no matter, regardless that it did lead you ultimately to your life path, it was probably like a punch in the gut or something even worse than that to have your own mom say that to you or to have that experience with somebody who you love and trust and who raised you. So I know we're making light of it. And I also could see that, I don't know, I think perhaps being seen or being authentically connected with yourself or another human being could perhaps be the scariest thing. And I'm just putting that out there. I don't know if it's true or not.
Oh, I think that's great. You know, I never thought of public speaking in that terms, but you're so right. That is what's scary about it, right? We're putting ourselves out there and hopefully we are showing up authentic as ourselves and being that vulnerable to say, plug into me, you know, here I am. And then everybody else can judge that. So I think that we're having the same issue of not just getting on stage, you know, or right with other people, but we're now having that same issue just with ourselves, just alone. I mean, how, and I struggle with this too. It's like, how long can you be still and just present in your own company without needing to pick up a device, without needing to go straighten up the knickknacks on the side table, you know, just what would the conversation be with yourself if there was nothing else going on? And I think a lot of us have gotten away from that. And so my work is really focused on how do we come back home? What is home? You know, and how do we come back to it? And then how do we build a structure in ourselves that is healthy and that is unique to us, so that we are not grabbing the mast off of someone else's ship and sailing with that, but we can really come home to ourselves. And you know, I know the show is the subject is around, you know, the workplace and all, and that is such doing what it is that you are passionate about, what you have a real desire to do, is so much part of the success story, right? You can go in and you can you know, feign interest and go into a vocation because you like the perk packages and all of this, and the title seems good, but at some point that is going to fail you. Most likely what I see what happens is you're not able to be that successful. And when I see people running into walls and having a hard time being successful in their position, I often have them take a step back and look at what is it that you're meant to be doing, you know, and really go back. Because once you find what it is that you're just naturally strong at and passionate about, and then you're able to land in that role, success just kind of like comes. It's almost a byproduct of you being there.
I think you've brought up some great points. So I know one thing I'm personally thinking, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners out there are thinking, is this is all great, but how do you start? How do you go from being bombarded by Facebook and Insta and Snapchat and phone calls and texts and all these different messages and media that are bombarding us at any moment, mm-hmm. to taking that moment to be mindful? I know I meditate every day. And it's only through the grace of transcendental meditation and some teachers I've had that I can sit quietly for as long as I can. And I still have thoughts that pop in my head. So I know I get people when I talk to them all the time about meditation who say, well, that's good for you, but I don't think I could sit silently for 30 seconds. So where do people start?
Isn't it interesting? I mean, I I'm exactly the same way. I wrote a book where mindfulness is a key practice in terms of nourishing our inner life, which is really has a lot to do with our relationship with self. It's essential. And yet I'd rather do anything else that, you know, somehow shows a trail that I've been doing something, right? It's like, you know, I'm a human doing, I'm not a human being. Mm-hmm. We've lost that ability to just be. And I read a lot of articles, and I'm most often struck by those that come out of the palliative care, you know, to those who are dying or hospice care. And time again, right, you find that the top regret is I didn't live true to myself. Mm. I didn't know that the key to life, the secret to life, was just to be. And there was a story of a woman who's very much like a lot of female executives in the world now. You know, we've finally been let in, you know, and it's like, go, go, go. She had two kids. You know, when she wasn't at work, it was home. You know, everything was on a schedule. I got to do this, right? It's like, you know, just knocking down goals every day, no matter what arena. And then she was diagnosed with terminal cancer, had a year to live.
Wow.
And she said her new mantra became, I have no time to rush.
Wow. Wait, whoa, whoa. I don't even think I can get my head around that. So can you say that again, please?
I have no time to rush.
That I'm so speechless.
It's and you see, I mean, I have goosebumps, and I get that every time I remind myself of her story, because at the end of the day, we don't have time to rush. You know, this is it. This life is it. And but why is it that the dying, those who have been given, you know, a year or less, realize that the gift of life isn't being fully present? It's in the quiet moments. It's in the moments communing with self and then communing with others, of noticing the smallest details, which you can only get if you slow down. And yet, you know, here you and I and others are with like, okay, you know, well, tell me how I'm supposed to get in mindfulness when I've got all this stuff, you know, I've got email popping up, I've got this or this. We'll come up with any excuse not to do it. The thing is, it's a choice. It's just flat out a choice. We can make time expand or collapse. You make time collapse by adding more things in. So if you want time, if you want to wake up and be 20 years down the road, you just keep doing. Keep doing and don't give yourself any breathing space. But you want time to stretch out, then slow down, you know, stretch out your own time. And the only way to do that, which sounds crazy for Americans, is to do less. I hear all the time, you know, there's gratitude practice, which I think is essential because it attunes us to positivity. You know, and I'll say, you know, write down 10 things. It's like, well, can I do just 3? It's like, you know, sure.
Start small, baby steps.
We're fighting our own nature, right?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I totally see what you're saying. And I do the gratitude thing every morning as well. And it's just mind-boggling sometimes. Like, I'll get to number 11, 12, 13, and 14. I'm going to Africa later this year, and I was informed there are no toilets there, nor are there showers, and I'm going to be staying in a hut, a literal hut, with the local villagers. And so every morning up until I go on that trip, I am grateful to have a shower that has hot water and grateful to have a toilet, and little things that if you live in a different part of the world, you might take for granted. And I think as we bring awareness and gratitude to these little mindful elements of our lives, it makes our life bigger. And if we just pay attention, like you said, to the details, I remember my business coach once upon a time had said a monk had taught him this technique where if you want to get somewhere faster, visualize where you want to go and just visualize yourself being there. And if you want to slow down time, so that's to speed up time, if you want to slow down time, just what you said is that you pay attention to everything and every detail in that moment, and time literally begins to slow down, whether or not you believe it does actually slow down, or whether it's a relative or a concept or a construct, it still does bring attention to something of what you just said. We spend our whole lives rushing around. And I know for you that helping people figure out their passion and connect to themselves is important. And let's be honest, I don't think any one of us is going to be able to hear the longings of our heart and what matters to us if we're rushing through life. One of my dear friends is in a meditation class, and she's been studying for the last 6 months. And I said to her, Wendy, how can you tell the difference between your ego versus your spirit, or your ego versus, you know, what really matters to you, your true passion? And she said, Jen, oftentimes, if you are listening to something that's coming from your head, that's going to be your ego. When it, whatever it is, that voice or that idea comes from your heart, that's your true spirit or your true purpose. And I thought that was such a cool concept that I had never known how to differentiate between ego and animal, or ego and spirit, or I guess ego, animal, or spirit, and kind of, you know, your highest and best good, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It does. And I think, you know, another way to spot whether or not it's the ego is that, you know, does it want something? You know, sort of, am I doing this because I'm wanting status? I'm wanting protection. I'm wanting validation. You know, that's usually when the ego is at work, because we're sort of building that suit of armor, that spacesuit version of ourselves that wants to go out into the world and be this thing, whereas the heart doesn't care. There's no quid pro quo. It's just because, you know, it's I need to do this. It's natural to me. I don't care, you know, whether or not I get fame or this or that or a raise or accolades from another. If they come, I won't deny them, but that's not, you know, the purpose.
That's not why you're getting out of bed.
And I think too, what it is about when you notice those moments, right, and you pay attention. I mean, just spending, you know, going on a walk, a mindful walk, where you're really just noticing the sounds around you. You're paying attention to what's happening in your world. when you eat, being mindful, when you're with others, you know, putting technology far, far away and just really holding the space that I'm going to be here. And when you get distracted and into your own loop, just not judging yourself, but saying, "Whoop, there I went again. Okay, I'm bringing myself back here again." When we do that, time does, you know, that feeling of time slowing down, I think that happens because then we're in conversation with the universe. There's a back and forth that starts to happen, whereas when we're rushing through life, instead of a conversation where cone is with, it's a versation, right? We're just like, this is me, my agenda, I'm blasting through this, and there's no there's nothing from the other side that we can engage with. And what I love about sort of slowing down are those moments when I realize I can tap into, gosh, you know, I'm noticing that this particular, you know, piece or element keeps resonating with me. Our life can start speaking to us, right? And also giving us clues of what we should be doing.
Yeah, and I think something great, too, that you do, it all comes down to conversation. I remember in preparation for the show last week, you and I started talking, and we were discussing what direction to take the show, and we kind of started laughing a little bit because you started saying how important it was about conversations and how that can really guide a person's life and have them be successful or kind of derail them. And I was laughing about the fact that's why I was in Atlanta last weekend, was to focus 100% about understanding partnership and conversations and even listening. There was this great concept I was introduced to recently about how so many of us human beings, like you were saying earlier, we listen to get something, to either contribute or to share something or to fix something. Or a lot of men sometimes will listen for, how can I fix this? And even some testosterone-driven women, I mean, it's not a man or a woman thing, but what really could make a difference in conversation is to listen to learn and to listen to what matters to people. Mm-hmm. It's a concept I just learned from Alison Armstrong recently, and it's such a fun concept to play with. What if we actually listen to learn something rather than to try and get our point across?
Yep, absolutely. We're so geared to, you know, it's listen to respond is how many of us operate. As soon as we hear someone starting to talk, we start preparing our answer, and it's all, you know, it's not because we're bad people. We're actually trying to be helpful. And then, yes, there is the ego in the background trying to prove its worthiness, because the ego's, you know, sort of fatal problem is that it doesn't like itself. So it's constantly making up for that, you know, in all these really weird neurotic ways. But yeah, when we realize we can let that go, and sometimes telling ourselves that this conversation, whether it's, you know, one or many, it's not about me. It's to be in service to others, to allow them to, you know, it's my job to hold the space for them to share and to get out what's important. That can be a good way to then get yourself to show up and sort of put the ego to bed a little bit.
That's great advice. And what would you say if people wanted to start engaging in more meaningful conversations, both with themselves about perhaps what they might be passionate about, or even with others, whether it's colleagues or loved ones? How might one start to engage in more meaningful conversations?
Well, you know, for me, you know, it's okay, go pick up the book, you know, but
that too, we definitely want that, everybody, right? Pick up the book.
So there's so much, but you know, to take it down to its base level, it's like a tree rooted in soil, right? The more shallow the root system is, and the thinner the soil, the more we're limited. Right. And so if we want to have a connection, let's say, with life that is at the end of it all meaningful to us, it's fulfilling to us. It's like one of those people that we say who swallowed the moon. You know, you see some people, they look like they swallowed the moon. It's like, what the heck is up with them? Those are people that are living 100% authentically to themselves. There's no need, no desire to put on any costume or any mask or to fit in any one of our molds. The people that you see out there who have swallowed the moon are simply those who are fully connected completely to themselves, and they are living through that. So if we want to experience that kind of connection with life, we have to start at the very base level, and that's our connection to self. I taught conversations and the skill of conversation and how to make connection with others. And oftentimes would sort of end up at a roadblock where I couldn't take people past. And I realized that that's because they're on shallow ground themselves. Mm. So the way to cultivate that connection with self is to do activities that bring you home, right, and connect you. And those are, I think we've talked about a lot of them, but mindfulness practices, whether it's, meditation, humming, mantras, journaling. But I think, engaging in some practice where you are connecting to what is happening in your inner world, right? Because there's a lot happening there. And the mind, the thoughts that we have that the mind likes to throw up on our screen are often lies. They're not true. They're these fantastical stories. And we have these brains that are geared still to survival against threats of other groups, like from way back when we were in the caves. And we're not living in the same threatening environment, but our brain, I study Dr. Dan Siegel a lot, our brain evolution hasn't caught up with how our society's changed. So our brain still has this need to make up threats. And so that's why we throw up on our screen all the time these like really bad stories about ourselves. I mean, that was my thing. It's like, if there was a way I could beat myself up, I'd go to town. It's like, give me a stick. I can really criticize myself, or others. It's constantly that victim mindset. People are after me. This is what's going on, right? We think we're so important, right? That, it's like, everyone's out to get me. And there's a lot of crap in there. But so we need to go through a journaling or a mindful process or something to let that kind of open up the doors and windows and let that air out and sift through with some skill that, these are thoughts. These are just thoughts. They're coming from a part of our brain that may or may not be helpful. But the more we do that and the more we breathe through them and just name them, for what they are, but begin to release the need to identify with them, just observe but not identify and cultivate awareness, then we can start to go beyond all of that kind of, that crud that's on the surface, flip that off and then start to really see who is Hallie, who is Jennifer, who's here, who does this home belong to? What needs some nurturing and love? What are parts of me that I didn't get that I can give myself, and what are parts of me that I haven't explored? And this can sound all woo-woo, but it's so important to just come home. And then when we set that rudder with ourselves, and we take the time to do that each day, and I do think gratitude practices are also an important way to sort of set a rudder, because we are so attuned to negativity. We just pick that up, and our media has trained us really well that by practicing gratitude, not only do we start to understand what it is that we appreciate, so then we start attracting more of that in our lives, because as soon as we make it conscious, the universe starts to participate with us and throw some of that our way. And then we just see more positivity overall because we start to shift our mindset. But when we throw that rudder down, then as we go through our day, things are going to change. Things are going to knock us off balance. Somebody's going to come in sideways, and send a nasty email. These things are going to happen. But because we have that strong rudder with ourselves, we're not going to be completely capsized by it. We will rock a little bit, but we will still know how to go forward in a way that's healthy. And So when we start there with creating that really positive, deep, connected relationship with ourselves, then all of our connections with others become just a natural extension of that. It's a lot easier, let me say, to work from that place than to train somebody how to have conversations that enhance relationships. That doesn't do any of this work. It's hard to get there, but when you start with yourself, there's very little training that then has to happen as you go up and out into the world.
Yeah.
It's long-winded.
Beautiful. You had some great gems in there. One thing that was funny that you just emphasized for me is that when I was working and studying partnerships, something that I learned about, and we don't think about it as human beings, whether it's personally or professionally, is we're taught to criticize one another the same way your mom probably criticized you, you know, when she had you leave the company or maybe even when you weren't there. I think that we're taught that if you want somebody to produce results, we have to criticize them and tell them they're bad or wrong. And what they've learned now, and what I learned in this class, and what also even animal trainers understand, is that you reward good behavior and you avoid punishing bad behavior. Because when we start punishing ourselves and we punish others, it's like we nitpick and we tell ourselves, you're bad, and let's list all the reasons that you screwed up. Versus if you tell somebody, great job, you know, I really liked how you did this, I would love to see more of that. I think that it brings out more of that human spirit side of you rather than the instinctual human animal side that you were just mentioning with the brain science. And it's so true. It's like that amygdala runs our life, our fight or flight. And so often, I mean, I just heard this recently, that amygdala part of our brain is 1 second ahead of our prefrontal cortex. So the part of our brain that makes good executive choices is always going to be 1 second behind our reactions and that animalistic, I'm going to kill somebody or what a jerk. And I just find it so amusing that, like, what if we could, like you said, control it? Because for thousands of years, we haven't had the same sort of threats that, you know, lions and tigers and bears. And now we have different things that we perceive as threats, but they're not really. It's not life and death. And if we can retrain our brains by conversations with ourselves, conversations with others that empower us, I think that's a beautiful way to create a foundation of health, happiness, well-being, and listening to what's good for you and what's good for others.
Yeah, it's all about that pause, right? You know, it's like way back when, if we heard a growl at our cave door, we had to react. You know, it's like you get up, you get your, you know, spear or whatever, and you go. And we're still doing that. and then, you know, we send the nasty email, and then we have massive regret 5 minutes later going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, I just did that, you know? Or we're a complete asshole and we don't have regret, but that's beside the point. You know, Viktor Frankl said, and I don't know if I'll have this quote quite right, but he said, between the stimulus and the response, there is a space. Mm. And therein lies our gift. And I feel, you know, for me, mindfulness is that wedge that Frankl was referring to between the stimulus and the response. When there's no wedge in there, when we are stimulated and then we act, that's a reaction. That's a hair trigger. And so many of us are very reactive. Our spouse looks at us one way, boom, there's a reaction. You know, our kids roll our eyes, boom, there's a reaction. But, you know, practicing mindfulness begins to create that muscle and create more and more of a wedge in ourselves, so that when a stimulus happens, we have the wherewithal to take a step back and consider, gee, I wonder what happened in my spouse's day today. Hmm. Or perhaps, you know, am I perceiving something that isn't there? Or let me go back and reread this email. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I have reacted. Thank God I haven't actually done anything, but I've had an emotional reaction to an email or a text that I've read, and I rant about it, and I go back and I reread it, and it says something completely different.
Right? Oh, like, my gosh, that happens all the time, where you, like, read it for the worst.
God, yeah.
the worst possible thing, and you respond to it sometimes, and hopefully you can learn to pause and not respond, or respond from a place of love and compassion rather than hate, anger, bigotry, whatever it might be. But I feel you 100%. I've been there.
I'm glad I'm not the only one, and it fascinates me. Like, I'm in awe, like, wow, you know. And I'll tell my wife, like, oh my gosh, like, this is amazing what I just did with this test. But that's how skewed our minds are towards that negative bias, and we have to recognize that. And you know, and that's why in some email programs, you can now replace the send button with the cue button. It's to save us from ourselves.
That's, you know, brilliant. I need to get that email, whatever type of email program that is. I need that, because it still happens about once a quarter. I've gotten down where it used to happen once a week or once a month, and I think I've gotten it down to once a quarter, but there's still that one email, and you just kick yourself the moment you hit send. You're like, ooh, if only I could just take that back. And you can't.
Yeah, there's no taking it back. But yeah, that cue button makes you think twice. It's like, you gotta hit that twice.
That is brilliant. Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show, Hal. You've had so many wonderful tips for all of our listeners. I do want everybody to go out and buy your book. I think it's extraordinary. Life Incorporated, A Practical Guide to Wholehearted Living. And it can be purchased on Amazon and other booksellers nationwide. Are there any other websites or information you want our listeners to know that you would recommend so that they can find out more about you or the work you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a website, lifeincorporated.co, lifeincorporated.co, and that's the website that I have for the book, and it's a place where I can go on sort of writing about all the topics and areas in the book and continue the conversation. And then for those who don't want to write in their book or choose the e-reader, all of it, because this is a practical guide, because I'm a doer. Like, I'm someone who's like, don't just tell me, now show me how. And I know we've been talking a lot about ideas during this conversation. In the book, there's exercises that will take you through everything that we've discussed, and so you can download those as PDFs and work on them.
Awesome. That is so great. I think the information you've shared is very valuable. And next week, I will be on vacation, and guest hosting the show will be Allison Garrido, and she'll be interviewing Lauren McGoodwin, founder and CEO of The Career Contessa. And they'll be talking about different tips and tricks to fine-tune your job hunt. And as always, if you miss any portion of the show or you want to listen to it again later, you can find it on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes, or of course on the archive of the LA Talk Radio Show website. Additionally, we've created a Get Yourself the Job Facebook page, so you can find us on there, share any comments you might have about our guests or any questions you'd like us to answer in the future. And thank you, as always, to all of our amazing listeners for tuning in, and to Hallie for generously sharing your time and all the wonderful ideas you had. You certainly made my day better, and I'm intending that it made a lot of our listeners' days better as well. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.